Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2002. Tiptoeing Around Our Problems.
Hello. We've been talking about the very dangerous situation in the Middle East recently, just because so much is happening there, and undoubtedly we'll be talking about it much more in the future. For that reason, I want to make very clear what my motives and sympathies are, lest I lead anyone astray and be thought a hypocrite for doing so. First, regarding Palestine. Although my sympathies definitely lie with the Palestinians rather than with the Jews, it is not horror at what the Jews are doing to the Palestinians that motivates me. What motivates me is horror that my country is being used by the Jews in their war against the Palestinians. If America were not involved at all in the Middle East, I still would sympathize with the Palestinians, and I would wish that they could be successful in driving the Jews into the sea and annihilating the abomination that is Israel. But that conflict between Jews and Palestinians would not be a major concern for me. At least my concern there would be dwarfed by my concern for problems more directly involving my own people in America and in Europe and in Southern Africa. Even now, with money and weapons being supplied by America and used to slaughter Palestinians, my concern is much less with monsters like Ariel Sharon who are doing the slaughtering than it is with the filthy creatures among my own people in America who are collaborating with Jews here to keep the weapons and money flowing to Sharon and are ready to do whatever else the Jews require of them here or abroad. So, when I tell you about Jews in occupied Palestine shooting Palestinian children, and disapproval and anger are evident in my voice, what I really am angry about is that the American people, my people, are being used for this murderous activity. I am angry that America's whole foreign policy has been perverted to serve Jewish interests at the expense of American interests. I am angry that America's political system has been perverted to ensure that we always have so-called leaders, whether Democrat or Republican, who are dependent on the Jewish media or Jewish money or both for their election and consequently will do the bidding of the Jews. I am angry that our whole government is riddled with Jews. Jews in our Defense Department, Jews in our State Department, Jews in our Immigration and Naturalization Service, Jews in our Justice Department, Jews in the President's speechwriting staff, who really set the policies of our government behind the scenes, while the politicians are out front in the spotlight making speeches and kissing babies and doing as they're told by the Jews behind the scenes. Did you know that it was a Jewish speechwriter, David Frum, who put the phrase "axis of evil" in George Bush's mouth to justify America's ongoing war against Israel's enemies? Did you know that a clique of Jews in the Defense Department and among George Bush's foreign policy advisors are the people actually running the so-called war on terror in Afghanistan? A war that they intend to expand to Iraq and any other Middle Eastern country that gets uppity in order to make that part of the world safe for Israel at American expense? Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld is a front man for his nominal subordinates, Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz and Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith, and George Bush's official foreign policy advisor, Condoleezza Rice, helps him meet his black quota for the cabinet, but it is the Jew Richard Perle, chairman of Bush's defense policy board, who gives him his foreign policy directives. As I've said on more than one occasion, George Bush is a feckless nincompoop who couldn't come up with a defense policy or a foreign policy on his own if he had to, which is why he's president. The real policymakers behind the scenes certainly don't want a man in the White House who has ideas of his own, because those ideas might conflict with theirs. And it is nothing but empty sophistry to make a distinction between Jews and Israel, such as Ariel Sharon and Shimon Peres, and the Jews in Mr. Bush's administration formulating his policies, or the Jews controlling our mass media. They all are Jews, and that's what really matters. There are many knowledgeable Americans besides me who think that it's not a good thing to have Jews using America to advance Israel's interests at the expense of America's interests. They know how the system works, how the Jews exert their control through money and media and a well-entrenched network of Jewish operatives such as Wolfowitz and Feith and Pearl. And many of these knowledgeable Americans also understand how Jewish subterfuge and deceit work. They understand that the Jews throw up a lot of smoke to conceal their control and make it appear that they have much less influence than they actually do. Despite this degree of understanding that many knowledgeable Americans have, there seem to be very few who are willing or able to draw the necessary conclusions. What I keep seeing are comments about the need to get the so-called peace process going again in the Middle East, and how there are hardline supporters of Israel who are obstructing the peace process because they think that it will give too much to the Palestinians or will compromise Israel's security or whatever. These knowledgeable Americans seem to believe that if we could just get around the Jewish hardliners somehow, if we could just neutralize Jews such as Wolfowitz and Feith and Pearl, if Ariel Sharon could be replaced by a moderate Jewish prime minister, then the peace process could proceed, America could gradually reduce its involvement in helping the Jews keep the Palestinians repressed, and eventually Israel no longer would be using America and everything would be rosy. And so these knowledgeable Americans expend all of their wit and energy in these trivial pursuits. Listen, do you know what the most hopeful aspect of the conflict between Jews and Palestinians is now? It is the ongoing radicalization of the Muslim masses throughout the whole Middle East. The collaborator governments in Pakistan, in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia are terrified of the reaction they see among their own people to what Ariel Sharon is doing to the Palestinians. When Sharon's Jewish troops shoot Palestinian children, Muslim mobs riot, and governments that now collaborate with the United States quake. Ariel Sharon is the best thing that has happened in the Middle East in the last 54 years. The Palestinian tactic of suicide bombing is being denounced by every politician and every media spokesman over here now. It's nothing but terrorism, they all say. There's no justification at all for suicide bombing, they tell us. Of course, whenever you hear that sort of unanimity from the politicians and the media people, you should be suspicious. In fact, suicide bombing is the best tactic for the Palestinians to use now because it provokes the Jews to step up reprisals. And the reprisals radicalize the masses in every country in the Middle East. If just one of the collaborator governments falls, the spines of all the rest will be stiffened, and the Bush government will be far less likely to find collaborators for building its so-called coalition to do the will of the Jews in the Middle East. Suicide bombers now hardly put a dent in the population of 5 million Jews in occupied Palestine, and Sharon's bloody reprisals hardly put a dent in the overall Palestinian population. But if conflict of this sort continues until just one collaborator government is overthrown, that ultimately will be worth more than 10,000 successful suicide bombings, in which only 20 or so Jews are killed each time. In the long run, there can be no real peace in the Middle East and no end to America's shameful role there and no future for the Palestinian people as long as there is an Israel. There seems to be a better understanding of these things among knowledgeable Palestinians than among knowledgeable Americans. Shallow thinking and the pursuit of trivial goals is even worse among knowledgeable Americans when it comes to domestic problems. They really do not want to grasp these problems with both hands and deal with them in a forthright way. Look, for example, at what uncontrolled immigration has done and is doing to America. And what do knowledgeable Americans propose to do about that? Very little, really. They make much of the fact that several of the Al-Qaeda hijackers who carried out the September 11th attack were in the United States only because of very lax immigration policies. And so that's a good reason for tightening up the policies. How about simply rounding up all illegal aliens immediately, all 12 million of them, and booting them and all of their offspring out of the country without further ado? Oh, no, no, no. We can't do that. Why not? Well, the media never would stand for it. The media would be all over anyone who even proposed a mass expulsion of illegal aliens. They would denounce any political leader who tried to do that as a racist and a neo-Nazi. And so knowledgeable Americans who understand the immigration disaster quite well continue tiptoeing around it, afraid to do or even say anything really significant about it, terrified even to think about really radical solutions that might actually end the problem. And it's the same with the rest of our domestic problems. Lots of people understand these problems and are worried about them, but they won't tackle them in any significant way. They let the Jews, the Jewish media, and Jewish money, and the entrenched Jewish network have their way for all practical purposes. Why? Why are the Jews permitted to get away with all of their destructive policies and activities without being challenged or opposed in any significant way? Part of the reason is that the Jews are very powerful, and therefore many people are afraid to cross them. They're afraid of the sort of media reaction I just mentioned in connection with immigration. Everyone understands that the Jews stick together and will viciously attack anyone who opposes them. It's the old story, so aptly expressed by the late 16th century writer Sir John Harrington. Harrington wrote, "Treason doth never prosper. What's the reason? For if it prosper, none dare call it treason." Today the Jewish power structure is prospering, and none dare oppose it or even call it what it is. Well, that's only part of the reason Jews are permitted to get away with so much. There's more to it than that. There's a mystique the Jews have built very carefully around themselves and nurtured diligently. It is a mystique of piety and injured innocence. It is a mystique that says to the Gentile world, "We are a gentle and inoffensive race, and because of this, everyone hates us. We're smart, and we work hard and achieve success, and because of this, everyone hates us. We are a highly moral and ethical race, and because of this, everyone hates us. We are a very talented race with many gifted members, many geniuses, and because of this, everyone hates us. We are a very altruistic race, a race of philanthropists who only want to make a better world for everyone, and because of this, everyone hates us." Many simpletons among the lemmings actually accept these claims at face value. Many knowledgeable people, however, who can see through these claims to the real Jews hiding behind them, still hesitate to challenge them. Part of the Jewish mystique is the so-called Holocaust. In its most simple-minded form, the Holocaust story is the claim that the Germans hated the Jews for the reasons I just mentioned, for their gentleness and their success and their morality and their talent and their altruism, and because of this hatred, roasted 6 million of them during the Second World War in gas ovens, to use one of the Jews' favorite Holocaust phrases. Actually, The Holocaust is a very powerful part of the Jewish mystique. The Jews crafted the Holocaust story with great care and great effort. Well, actually, not with as much care as they might have used. It's as full of holes as a Swiss cheese. But still, it is sufficient to make most people, even those who understand what Jews are really like, hesitate to attack them. People don't want to be seen as bullies. They don't want to be seen as so insensitive that they would criticize the Jews who already have suffered so much, poor dears, at the hands of anti-Semites. In several past broadcasts, we've looked at a number of the lies and exaggerations and distortions that make up the Holocaust story. There are a number of good books available on the subject from the sponsor of this broadcast, National Vanguard Books, including Norman Finkelstein's excellent book, The Holocaust Industry, which I discussed in an earlier broadcast. The point is that despite the lies, despite the fact that many knowledgeable Americans are aware of the lies, the Holocaust still serves its purpose for the Jews. People are afraid of the image conjured up by the Holocaust. Perhaps it's that American life is too soft. Perhaps it is that too many people still are influenced by Christian sentiments. Whatever the reason, many otherwise knowledgeable and hard-headed Americans just can't entertain the idea of rounding up the Jews and getting rid of them, even when the situation is as urgent as it is in America today. And really, in the long run, that is the only way to solve the Jewish problem. The Germans understood that back in the 1930s, and they had the courage and the foresight to act on their understanding. Unlike Americans today, they had an honest government concerned above all with the survival, welfare, and progress of the German people. And they began doing what was necessary, forcing the Jews to immigrate wholesale from Germany beginning in 1933. And because of that, the Jewish propaganda machine has attacked the Germans so viciously, has so blackened and demonized their image, that today even knowledgeable people are afraid to be associated with that image. They are afraid to say that the Germans were right, that the Germans were justified, and that we need to do the same if we are to survive. So, as I said, the Holocaust story, despite its glaring discrepancies and lies, still serves as a shield for the Jews. It still protects them from criticism. Well, mostly. In parts of Europe not quite as poisoned by Jewish propaganda as America is, the shield has slipped a bit. A large British department store chain, Selfridges, has yielded to demands from anti-Israel demonstrators and has removed from its shelves products marked Made in Israel. Last week, the second largest supermarket chain in Norway, Coop Norge, which is to say Norway Co-op, announced its decision to boycott all Israeli imports. That decision was not the result of pressure from anti-Israel demonstrators, but was based on the feeling by Coop Norge management that it would be immoral to continue supporting the Israeli economy by selling Israeli imports under the present circumstances. That is a step forward, though it is a long way from what is needed. The Jews, of course, immediately began waving their Holocaust story around, and now as the boycott movement catches hold in Scandinavia, they are trying to portray themselves as injured innocents being attacked once more by anti-Semites. They are comparing the growing Scandinavian boycott of Israeli products to the German boycott of Jewish merchants in the late 1930s. Certainly, a boycott of Israeli products is a good thing, and the fact that such a boycott is even thinkable by big businessmen today is a sign that the Jewish mystique, and in particular, the Jewish Holocaust story, is becoming a bit shop-worn. It no longer has the hypnotic power that it once had, at least in some parts of the world. And I suppose that we should be happy about that. The unfortunate fact remains, however, that in America the Jews still have their money and their media and their entrenched network of bureaucrats. And even if the Holocaust story has lost some of its charm in Europe, it still keeps most knowledgeable Americans intimidated. Knowledge isn't enough. Courage and boldness also are necessary. Honesty and forthrightness are necessary also. Tiptoeing around the critical issues of our time isn't enough. Tiny reforms in our disastrous foreign policy and in our disastrous immigration policy and in a dozen other disastrous policies aren't enough. We need to stop apologizing to the people who are destroying us and go full bore at destroying them instead. Instead of being hypnotized by the Holocaust story, we need to look with clear eyes at why there was a need for action against the Jews in Germany in the 1930s and 1940s. The Jews claim today that the Germans were suffering from collective insanity and had no reason for trying to get the Jews off their backs is as phony as George Bush's claim that Osama bin Laden had no reason for attacking America on September 11th. Wherever Jews go, they corrupt and destroy. That is their nature, always and everywhere. Let us be thankful to the Palestinians who now are making such terrible sacrifices to help the world see what the Jews are like. And I suppose we also should be thankful to Ariel Sharon for demonstrating so forthrightly to the world what Jews are like. Let us hope that the conflict between Jews and Palestinians intensifies and lasts long enough to wake up many more of our people around the world and fill them with disgust at America's continuing support for the Jews. Let us hope that it lasts long enough to bring about the overthrow of every collaborationist regime in the Muslim world. Let us hope that it brings about an airtight oil embargo against the United States and shuts off the lights in every shopping mall and every sports stadium in America long enough for the lemmings to become restless and begin asking questions. Let us hope that it makes the efforts of every fool and every traitor who is striving for a resumption of the so-called peace process so obviously futile that these efforts no longer have the power to deceive anyone. Ultimately, of course, we must not depend on the Palestinian suicide bombers or on Ariel Sharon's murder squads to do for us what we should be doing for ourselves. Ultimately, we must stop tiptoeing and begin marching boldly and forthrightly toward solving our own problems. Thanks for being with me again today.